The headlines this hour: at least 16 people are killed and 24 others wounded in a blast targeting a religious school in northern Afghanistan. Israeli forces gunned down another Palestinian in the West Bank, raising to 7 the number of Palestinians they killed in the occupied territory since Tuesday. And the former Chinese president Jiang Zemin, who paved the way for the rise of China's economy, dies at the age of 96.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Another deadly day in Afghanistan. An explosion targeting a seminary in northern Samangan province leaves dozens of people dead or injured. According to a medical source, at least 16 people were killed and 24 others wounded in the blast in the city of Aibak. But the Taliban government has lowered the death toll. The Interior Ministry spokesman says 10 students died and many others injured in what he described as an unforgivable crime. He says an investigation has been launched to identify the perpetrators. No group or individual has yet claimed responsibility, but the blast bears the hallmarks of the Daesh terror group. While overall violence has significantly dropped since the Taliban takeover of the country last year, bomb attacks continue to target cities, including the capital, Kabul. Many of these attacks have been claimed by Daesh. Earlier, Kabul correspondent Rahmatullah Baghban joined us with details on the explosion that targeted a seminary in northern Afghanistan, recounting conflicting reports of casualties.
Today at around 1 in the afternoon, a large explosion hit a religious seminary, also known as Madrasa, called Al-Jihad, in the Aibak central city of Samangan in northern Afghanistan. According to the eyewitnesses, the explosion went off when a large number of students and people were attending the school, the religious school. Local sources report a high number of civilian casualties. Samangan Provincial Hospital has announced that it has received 15 dead and 27 wounded. Local journalists have reported that at least 23 people are killed and more than 30 others are injured in the attack. I just spoke with the Taliban's spokesman for the Ministry of Interior, Abdul Nafeh Takur. He confirmed the incident, saying that at least 10 students were killed in the attack, in the bomb explosion, and dozens of others. The number is not clear yet, or injured. He also said that the Taliban detective and security forces are working to identify the perpetrators and bring them to justice.
There's been a deadly bomb explosion in the city of Quetta in southwestern Pakistan, 2 days after a militant group declared an end to its summer ceasefire with the government. According to the police, the blast hit a patrol team as it was guarding polio vaccinators. 3 people are confirmed dead, including a woman and a child, and more than 20 others have been wounded. The Pakistani Taliban, known as Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, has claimed responsibility. The group ended its ceasefire with Islamabad this week, adding that it would soon resume the attacks. The militants have been waging a war against the state, killing thousands of Pakistanis in the past 2 decades. The Pakistani Taliban are separate from the Afghan Taliban. Their aim is to overthrow the government. A correspondent in Islamabad, Nasser Kazmi, says this was to be expected, given that the Pakistani Taliban had earlier announced the resumption of their operations.
We have seen such attacks, especially one of the deadliest attacks happened last month in Lucky Marwat area of Khyber province, where the police van was targeted, in which more than 5 police cops died in that attack. After that, Pakistani security forces have started carrying out operations against the militant hideouts near Pakistan border. But since that, the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan, who had been engaged with the Pakistani government in recent months and announced a ceasefire, but that ceasefire was ended a few days ago as the group claimed that they will carry out their operations because the Pakistani government is not fulfilling their promises. And now we have witnessed that this massive attack has took place today in this area.
Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The victim, a young man, was shot dead in a town west of Jenin on Wednesday afternoon. Elsewhere in the West Bank, a Palestinian child succumbed to the wounds that he sustained last month after being shot by Israeli forces. The two deaths happened just a day after five Palestinians fell victim to the regime's violence in the occupied territories. Israel has been carrying out deadly attacks on Palestinian towns and cities almost on a daily basis. So far this year, the regime forces have killed more than 200 Palestinians in their attacks in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Mona Kandil is our correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah. Well, there's been lots of, unfortunately, deaths that have occurred, at least not only just in the past couple of days, it appears, Mona, but overall. Give us a roundup if you can.
Unfortunately, the number of Palestinians falling victim to Israeli violence continues to rise, as you have said. Yesterday alone, five Palestinians were killed in separate incidents across the occupied West Bank. Today, a 13-year-old Palestinian, Isa Hani, from the town of Ar'ara, in the land occupied in 1948, succumbed to injuries he sustained last month. In Jenin, Israeli troops again raided the Jenin area and Jenin refugee camp in order to arrest an ex-Palestinian prisoner, former Palestinian prisoner Abdel Ghani Hirzallah. Clashes took place between the former Palestinian prisoner, who is described by the Israeli forces as wanted, and the Israeli troops. Then, unfortunately, they arrested him. However, a number of Palestinians were wounded, including a 26-year-old Mohammed Badarni from Ya'bad town. He was transferred to Jenin Hospital, and then he succumbed to his injuries. So Israeli violence and aggression continues. At the same time, when the Israelis refuse for the Palestinians to resist the Israeli occupation, basically, Israeli troops are raiding areas that are supposed to be under full Palestinian control, that is supposed to be under what's called the future Palestinian state. However, the Israelis, under different excuses, unjustified excuses, raid Palestinian areas, commit crimes, arrest people, destroy homes, and kill Palestinians in cold blood.
Very well, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mona Kandil there from occupied Ramallah. Thank you, Mona. The Israeli regime has been preventing the entry of medical equipment for Gazan hospitals as part of its blockade on the coastal territory. The practice has already taken its toll on Palestinian patients. This has prompted the Ministry of Health to call for an end to the measure. Ashraf Shannon has more from Gaza.
The Ministry of Health in Gaza has held a press conference near the Israeli-controlled Erez crossing in northern Gaza. The aim was to demand the entry of badly needed medical equipment and diagnostic devices into the blockaded Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime refuses to allow the entry of medical equipment as well as spare parts for devices that are needed to treat thousands of patients in Gaza. Hospitals in the besieged coastal territory are in dire need of such equipment. We asked the Ministry of Health why Israel refuses to allow medical equipment into Gaza. Here's what they had to say.
They prevent the release of those equipment inside Gaza to kill more patients inside Gaza. And you know, as a matter of fact, many of those patients who were killed inside Gaza have died succumbing to their destiny with fatal preventable complications because of shortage of medications, medical supply, and equipment.
Gaza's health sector has been suffering under years of the Israeli blockade. Israel refuses to allow new medical equipment as well as spare parts to fix vital equipment, especially those that are needed to treat cancer patients and diagnose severe illnesses.
The ongoing Israeli blockade for almost 16 years has undermined the entire health system in Gaza. Over 1,000 patients have lost their lives because of the blockade, and more patients are dying because of it. Israel bans the entry of medical equipment and denies thousands of patients the right to get medical treatment outside Gaza.
The territory's biggest medical center, Gaza's Shifa Hospital, is struggling to provide health services due to lack of medical equipment. Hundreds of medical devices are currently out of order due to lack of spare parts. The Israeli regime prevents the entry of badly needed hospital equipment, allegedly for security reasons. The lack of medical equipment is endangering the lives of Palestinian patients here in Gaza,
Hundreds of them have already lost their lives under the ongoing Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Staying with China, former President Jiang Zemin has died at the age of 96. He passed away due to leukemia and multiple organ failures. Zhang took office in 1989 and presided over a decade. During his term as the Communist Party leader, China emerged as a major manufacturing power and a rising economic rival to the developed world. Among his significant achievements was the return of Hong Kong to China after more than 100 years of British rule. Chinese flags will be flown at half-mast at government and Communist Party buildings to mark his death. The date of his funeral will be announced later. Russia and China have held joint military drills in the Asia-Pacific region amid rising tensions with the United States. Russia's defense ministry says its strategic missile carriers and Chinese fighter jets flew over the Sea of Japan and the East China Sea on Wednesday. In a statement, the ministry said the exercises lasted 8 hours with aircrafts on both sides landing on each other's land for the first time. It added the maneuvers were carried out in strict compliance with international law and were not aimed at any third country. The drills come amid Washington's rising tensions with China and Russia. China is at odds with the U.S. over a host of issues, including its military presence in the region. Relations also soured between Moscow and Washington following Russia's military offensive in Ukraine. The Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani has made his first visit to the Islamic Republic. Al-Sudani and Iranian officials discuss security, peace, and stability, fighting terrorism, and extending economic cooperation in the region.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said anything that may disrupt Iran's security will inevitably impinge on Iraq as well, calling on the Baghdad government to exercise greater sovereignty over areas in the country's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with visiting Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani and his accompanying delegation in the Iranian capital city of Tehran. The leader then pointed to earlier statements by senior Iraqi officials that the Baghdad government will not allow the Arab country's soil to be used as a staging ground to launch attacks on neighboring states in accordance with the Iraqi constitution. He said that unfortunately, this is currently happening in some parts of Iraq, adding, "The only solution is for the central Iraqi government to exercise greater sovereignty over those areas." The leader noted that Iran believes that the security of neighboring Iraq is equivalent to the Islamic Republic's own security, emphasizing that Tehran will confront any part intending to disrupt the security of the Arab nation. Ayatollah Khamenei also congratulated Sudani on his election and wished him success in elevating Iraq's standing to a level worthy of the Arab country's civilization and history. He stated that Iraq's progress and its higher position at the global stage is in the best interests of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei highlighted the need for cohesion and unity among various Iraqi political groups plus maximum utilization of the young Iraqi generation in order to achieve the desirable goal. He said Iraq's development would draw the fury of certain parties who may not want to exhibit it openly, calling on Baghdad to rely on the Iraqi nation in the face of enemies' plots. The leader also underlined the necessity of implementing the agreements signed between the two countries, particularly those in the field of trade cooperation, transit of commodities, and railroad transport. Sudani, for his part, hailed the strategic and historical relations between Iran and Iraq, pointing to the joint campaign against the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group as a prominent example of such a fact. He also paid tribute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, the second in command of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Unit, referring to the two fallen anti-terror commanders as another illustration of amity between the Iraqi and Iranian nations. Sudani also stressed the new Iraqi administration is determined to bring into force the agreements already signed between Tehran and Baghdad and further expand bilateral relations, especially in the field of trade transactions.
Well, as mentioned there, heading a high-ranking delegation, al-Sudani, the new PM of Iraq, arrived in Tehran, and he was officially welcomed by President Ebrahim Raisi. He also met with Iran's leader. Some of the important highlights that came out of that, both al-Sudani and Raisi agreed on what was ranking the highest on the list, and that is the fight against terrorism, especially on the poorest border, and, of course, any other source of regional insecurity for it to be dealt with.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has said Iran and Iraq attach special significance to the promotion of peace and stability in the region, stressing that both states are firmly determined to fight the source of terrorism and regional insecurity. The Iranian president made the remarks while speaking in a joint press conference with the new Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani, who arrived in Tehran on Tuesday. He added that only the countries in the region should ensure regional security, stability, and peace. The Iranian president stressed that the presence of foreign forces in the region does not bring in security at all, but it is a problem in addition to our problems. As the U.S. presence in Afghanistan and Iraq has failed to promote security, it would also fail to result in any outcome in other parts of the region, saying the American forces' withdrawal from the region can definitely contribute to the security of the region. Elsewhere in the presser, Raisi said ties between Tehran and Baghdad are rooted in the two nations' beliefs and expressed hope the two sides would further expand cultural, political, social, and security cooperation. The Iranian president noted that economic, trade, monetary, and banking issues, as well as the export of electricity and gas, are also on the agenda of the talks between the two sides' delegations. On the other hand, the Iraqi prime minister said his country would not allow terrorist groups to use its soil to harm any country, particularly Iran. Sudani added that the inseparable security of Iran and Iraq is complementary to each other and is a part of the regional security. He said the Iraqi government is ready to establish a working mechanism with Iran to prevent any tension, as it believes that dialogue and interaction are the best solution to the woes.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Allahumma azma bala'i wa afrat bi suhali wa qasrat bi a'mali wa qa'adat bi aghlali wa habasani an naf'i bu'd amali وخدعتني الدنيا بغرورها ونفسي بجنايتها. Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. أم كيف يشتمل عليه زفيرها وأنت تعلم ضعفه؟ How should its groaning encompass him while you know his weakness? أم كيف يتقلقل بين أطباقها وأنت تعلم صدقه? How should he be convulsed among its levels while you know his sincerity? أم كيف تزجره زبانيتها وهو يناديك يا ربه? How should its keepers torture him while he calls out to you, O Lord? أم كيف يرجو فضلك في عتقه منها فتتركه فيها? How should he have hope of your bounty in freeing him from it while you abandon him within it? Hayhat, far be it from you. مَا هَكَذَا ظَنُّ بِكْ Such is not expected of you. We were mentioning some of the instances and wonders of Almighty Allah's mercy and His favorites. Let us refer to one more of His infallibles. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam once accompanied a caravan that was going towards the desert. This is what Imam Musa ibn Ja'far narrates from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. When Imam Sadiq was accompanying that caravan that was going through the desert, the caravan was informed that the thieves have hidden themselves on their way. The people of the caravan trembled with fear. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam inquired about the reason for their fears. They said, we have come to this place and we have got with us great property and wealth, and we are feared that the thieves will take it from us. And they asked Imam Sadiq, would you take them from us as the thieves might not take them from you? Imam alayhi salam said, you cannot be sure. Maybe they only intend to rob me, and then your property would be stolen by them as well. The people said again, so what can we do? Is it wise to bury our property under the ground? Imam said, no, because they may get damaged. Someone may rob them after you, or you might not be able to relocate them. The caravan people asked, what can we do then? Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, give them to the one who can protect them. Increase the amount of them and then give them back to you more than you need. And they asked, who is it? Imam replied, the Lord of the worlds. They said, how can we do this? And Imam alayhi salam stated, give them away as charity to poor Muslims. They said, we have no access to poor in the middle of the desert. And Imam said, intend to give away one-third of it so that Allah would save all of it. And they said, we intend it. And Imam said, you are safe now, so go on and continue your journey.
Oh Allah, my trials and sufferings have increased and my evilness has worsened. My good deeds have diminished and my misdeeds have become firm. and remote hopes restrain me from profiting with good deeds. And the world has deceived me with its allurements, and my own self has been affected by treachery and my delay. Therefore, my Lord, I ask you by your greatness not to let my sins and my misdeeds veil my supplications from you, and not to disgrace me by exposing those of which you have knowledge, nor to hasten my retribution for those vices and misdeeds committed by me in secret, which were due to evil-mindedness, ignorance, excessive lustfulness, and my negligence.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of Dua.
So the caravan continued their journey. When the caravan moved, the thieves appeared. The caravan people were afraid, but Imam alayhi salam told them, "Why are you afraid? Well, Allah will save you." The thieves came, and recognizing Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, they kissed his hand and said, "Last night we dreamt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, and he ordered us to protect you and the caravan. Now we are at your service." Imam alayhi salam said, "There is no need for your help. The one who saved us from you will save us from the other enemies and robbers." So the caravan reached the city, and the people gave away 1/3 of their property to the poor. And furthermore, they witnessed abundance in their wealth. Every drachma got multiplied by 10, and they were astonished at this. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam told them, "Now that you know about trading with Allah, continue trading with him." This is the Almighty Allah that saves your wealth and your property just by intention of you for giving 1/3 of it to the poor. This saves not just your life, but just your property and wealth. So when Allah's favorite servants are so generous to the others, what would be the level of Allah's generosity? It is because of Allah's indefinite mercy and unending benevolence that Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, after saying, "O Allah, can't you see yourself hearing within the fire the voice of a slave surrendered to you, imprisoned there because of his violation," says, "Far be it from you. This is not expected of you. Hayhat ma dhalika dhannu bik." We are nearly done with this part of the Divine Command supplication, dear listeners. Thank you for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be the most close to you through high.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bazaar.
Many people have ideas. However, those who turn their ideas into reality are the ones who search for ways to make their ideas happen. More often than not, this occurs by joining knowledge with method. Knowledge brings competitive advantages and generates sustainable market leadership. Its tools are creativity and innovation, which are all intangible human talents. Never more than now has knowledge been so critical and significant in production and the shift towards a knowledge-based economy.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiyarzadeh, and this week we are going to explore the central role science and technology parks play in complementing the knowledge-based production ecosystem. We wanted to see how the government is shifting towards a knowledge-based economy, and plus we wanted to understand why tech parks are so critical to industry development and the national economy. So let's get started. To better understand the country's knowledge-based ecosystem, we visited an event at Semnan Science and Technology Park where we could get some answers. Science and technology parks are where startups and innovative teams can operate in one geographical location. These areas provide diverse services and facilities to companies that fit the criteria. We were able to catch up with a couple companies that operate out of this park. One of these companies specializes in producing advanced machines used in mining. This company is one of only a handful that has managed to indigenize these previously imported products. Another company we ran into while at the event specializes in making hardware and software with artificial intelligence. Events like the one we visited helped braid together and link companies, investors, and infrastructures with the necessary resources to complete projects. These components all make up the various parts of the knowledge-based ecosystem. But we also wanted to know how science and tech parks operate and why they are attractive to businesses. One of the advantages of these parks is that it's a space where crucial resources are offered. These places are a focal point for serving knowledge-based companies producing advanced specialized products needed in the domestic market. Science and technology parks also serve as a launching pad toward the international arena. We spoke with a park official who helped shed more light on this issue.
There are four scenarios of which foreign companies could have the opportunity to reside in Semnan Science and Technology Park. Well, the first scenario will be the execution of soft landing programs between the two countries, which gives the foreign companies an opportunity to get familiar with the host country's market. Well, the second scenario will be holding joint events, including joint startup events, fairs and similar events which could help them get familiar with each other. And the other scenario, or the third way that a company could have the chance to come to our park, will be to find and carry out joint projects with our companies, and finally sharing the interests. The fourth scenario will be holding joint innovation tours, which gives the companies an opportunity to get familiar with how innovation ideas are being implemented in other countries.
These parks are essential in filling a gap in the tech innovation ecosystem, providing monetary resources and attracting investments. These establishments also join investors with particular companies and projects. They offer numerous unique services such as facilitating visa processes, offering financial assistance such as soft loans or even special incentives under free trade zones like tax exemptions. And it doesn't stop there. This park offers so much more to investors.
The other solution, or the other way that could attract foreign investors, will be to define BOT models, which means they have to introduce projects and within the framework of our protocols. And once it has been approved, They can operate the project for a while. This includes mainly long-term projects, particularly, and I shall have to tell you, that Semnon Science and Technology Park is very interested in projects in the fields of artificial intelligence, IT, ICT, IoT, and virtual reality. And we could help these companies. And once they have, once they build it and then operate it, they could transfer it to our park.
Most tech parks, such as this one, are active in the international sphere and collaborate with other domestic tech parks. Furthermore, these areas function as export hubs. Therefore, one of their main activities is boosting and supplying domestic products to this end. Over the years, the government has placed special attention on knowledge-based companies while implementing new approaches to support tech parks and their businesses. Some of these initiatives aim to remove obstacles along the path of development of these companies. Other activities involve giving resources to executive branches to further develop the ecosystem of innovation and technology nationwide. Along these lines, the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology has implemented a series of activities. This includes investing some $1.4 billion towards financial services. The government has also created a strategic technology development headquarters. It is tasked with implementing 400,000 tech projects and 150 commercialization projects. But that's not all. The government has also established 65 innovation centers and dozens more accelerators to support the developing entrepreneurship ecosystem. Currently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies scattered across the nation. These enterprises offer services and products in numerous industries. Many are active in biotech, computer software, agriculture, food, chemical tech, aircraft maintenance, steel, gas, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals, just to name a few. According to government figures, the knowledge-based ecosystem accounts for more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. Moreover, the share of knowledge firms in the country's GDP in 2019 exceeded $34 billion and witnessed a 450% growth since then. That's all according to the Vice President for Science and Technology, Soreno Satori. Now it's time for me to take a little break here and hand it over to my good friend out in the field who's prepared a report for us.
In ancient Iran, felt was already used in the production of numerous kinds of clothing, bed clothes, floor carpets, and different kinds of sacks. In fact, the Iranian world may have been an important center for the development of felt technology. In the modern world today, felt or namat has found its way to industries of all kinds in various forms.
You just can't imagine how crowded this place is. Whenever I want to talk on the phone, I have to find a sign-up place to be able to talk to you. It's really crazy. God, in today's chaotic society, stress is an issue that many of us suffer from every day. But what matters most is trying to find the stress sources and try to find effective solutions. For this reason, today I'm here to tell you that I finally found a startup, a new innovative company that has finally found a solution to this disastrous problem. I won't tell you any further. Let's just go and check it out.
Felt, or so-called namat, is the acoustic solution for rowdy places to absorb and decrease undesirable noises. The aim is to provide sound serenity and to improve physical, mental, and psychological health. Namat Studio's scope of work is based on designing and manufacturing products. Recently, it has also played a significant role in different projects like some innovation centers in Asia and Africa. This company has focused on designing and building acoustic products. Generally in Iran, there is no specific competitor in this field. However, there are some groups in America and Northern Europe that are engaged with Felt.
If I want to tell you about a history about how our company established, it goes back to 3 years ago when Diva was chosen to renovate the innovation factory of Iran, that was the biggest one in the time. And the designer tried to make the offices and they tried to design a place that the people be comfortable, have a good place to work. That's why we understand that we have some advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages is about the sound pollution that we had in the this area, that places were noisy and the employees didn't like that. That's why we try to use special materials for control this sound pollution. And we reach the felt material and we try to use this material.
Designing acoustic and movable working stations with the aim of recycling old products and reuse them in different functions. What is worth noticing about this business is the fact that the problem-solution method is based upon three WH questions. Why, how, and what? Why is to define the problem? How is the process towards the solution? And what is the final product and prototype? These acoustic solutions were combined with architecture in various parts of the space and played the role in sound insulation and creating a silent space. All right, now I want to walk you through some of the major products that are made of felt. The first piece we have here is an artwork that is made of wool felt that acts as a sound-absorbing material, not only as an aesthetic material that you can put it in your home place, but also as a sound-absorbing material. There is this phone booth. If I get inside, I can feel the private space and how the atmosphere really changes. It improves the acoustic vibes and reduces the reverberation when I get inside. And there's this whole thing, we call it desk divider. It's actually one of the main products in this company. People and employees put it in their on their desk to divide their own workplace with the person right next to them.
We have three different kind of material that we use on our works that absorb undesirable sounds, which are wool panels, or the other name is felt, and in Persian we say namat, and thermofelt and carpet. And the felt are in two kind of industrial felt and the natural felt. Natural felt is made by wools, and industrial material is made by a process by the battles and pet materials. They have different color patterns and thicknesses. The thicknesses are from 3 millimeter to 50 millimeter. And about the thermofelt, we have this material that we can use for more absorption. It has three kind of material with polyester, jeans, and heavy traffic, and it's very good for absorbing. And the last one is the carpet that is heavy traffic that we use in heavy traffic places such as the offices, and it can be cleaned very easy by the vacuum cleaner.
As I mentioned earlier, this idea was created based on the concept of recreating, recycling, and revitalizing the surrounding substances and generalizing this idea to the upcoming products with different potentials.
Such small-scale products are intended to improve the mental and physical health of users. And finally, creating a comfortable, inviting atmosphere.
Just like this linear lighting, almost everything here is made of felt. Based on environmental psychology, this linear lighting has been created in a way to provide maximum visual and acoustic comfort in the workplace, especially a co-working space like this. This company, Namad Startup, has been trying to promote sustainability and also take steps towards industrialization. Among all the products here, there were so many things, but I decided to choose felt laptop case to carry my laptop with me wherever I go. So it's not about the ideas, it's about making the ideas happen. I've been Sarah Dema.
There is so much more that can be said about the country's knowledge-based production and activities, so before we go, let's look at a couple of developments in this area. Most of us are familiar with vitamin supplements. However, some vitamins need to be injected, which can be a hassle. Now, a knowledge-based company has produced an oral form of one of these vitamins, saving many of us from the pain of sticking needles. This pharmaceutical company has produced the first oral form of a vitamin B complex that was typically only found in an injectable form. This company also operates out of Pardis Science and Technology Park. It is also one of the first and largest knowledge-based companies. It might be interesting to know that this company mainly produces raw materials such as probiotic products needed in the pharma industry. Such productions have saved the country millions on imports so far. Knowledge-based productions are driven by scientific discoveries, and Iranian scientists produce roughly 2% of the world's scientific articles. That's according to the Minister of Science, Research and Technology. Mohammad Ali Zulfigol says Iran, on average, registers around 70,000 scientific articles in international journals each year. He says Iran is now globally ranked 15th. For the number of scientific papers it produces. Zulfigol noted the quality ranking of Iranian articles in the top 10 fields like technology and engineering. The minister highlighted that the nation ranks 5th in nanotechnology publications as well. The official further added that those publishing academic articles also work in knowledge-based companies, helping produce quality products in the competitive field. And with that, we come to the end of this segment. You can contact us with your thoughts and comments via email. And don't forget, you can also send us topics you're interested in. Thank you for tuning in and join us next week, same time, for another edition of Bazaar. It's bye for now. Until then.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.